It turns out that the Affordable Care Act provided federal tax credit subsidies to qualified lower-income individuals who signed up in exchanges established by the states. But as you know, 36 states, the redder ones, opted to not set up those exchanges, forcing their residents onto federal exchanges, which caused a lawsuit, and thus...
The law doesn't expressly say people who get their insurance through federal exchanges also get those tax credits.
Oh my God, I'm being blown! Yes, they finally got Obamacare. See, the law says you must be enrolled in through an exchange established by the state. Now, a normal person might say, do you really think the law intended subsidies only for lower income citizens of states that weren't being dicks about the exchanges? Well, two of the three judges in this instance said, yeah, we have to take that sentence literally. I'm just happy both judges got to work that morning, assuming that once they hit stop signs, their day ends.
There you go. There's more of that on The Daily Show. If you'd like to see it, Jon Stewart goes on. That's his take. And you also heard Joe Johns of CNN in there reporting. But now we're going to go to the guy who can give us all the answers and tell me what, if anything, was wrong, either that Jon Stewart said or that Joe Johns said, because he's supposed to be the best on this issue. And he is an assistant professor of law at University of Michigan Law School, is also a contributor to The Incidental Economist, friend of the friends of the show. And so now he's going to be a friend of the show. Professor Nick Bagley is joining us. Hello, sir.
Hi, Pete. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Aaron told me you're really charismatic, so, this should be good.
I will do everything I can to contradict that on this show.
Well played. Jon Stewart, Joe Johns there on CNN, anything wrong outside of the sarcasm?
No, I think Jon Stewart has this case pretty much dead to rights. The statutory language does say that when you purchase a health care plan, you get a tax credit that's keyed to the cost of a health plan on an exchange established by the state. And read in context, it's pretty clear that Congress meant, look, when you go on an exchange, you're going to get a tax credit, because not only would the contrary reading sort of make a dog's breakfast of the entire statute, but no one during the congressional debates ever suggested that people who went on federally established exchanges wouldn't be able to get tax credits. If that were in fact the case, lots and lots of people who can't otherwise afford health plans won't be able to get health insurance. And one thing we definitely know about the Affordable Care Act was that it was designed to make sure that everybody could get access to health insurance.
So then, legally speaking, what is your point of view on the challengers in this case, idea of what intent means?
Yeah, well, what they advanced is a very cramped version of what you might think of as literalism. They are enamored of a textual theory where you read every single word of a statute for all that it's worth. And if the consequences are dumb, well, that's just what Congress said. That's a theory that has its adherents, including on the federal bench, which is why you got a 2-1 decision out of the D.C. Circuit. But it's a pretty radical theory, and it's a theory that comes under pressure in a case just like this, where a literal construction of the statute leads to results that are so palpably absurd. So, you know, in that case, what's the right approach? Is it to try to make sense of the statute as a whole, or is it to insist doggedly that this silly construction must nonetheless be the one that Congress intended? And, you know, I think you have to be, if you had to drink the Kool-Aid and a lot of the Kool-Aid in order to think that you ought to cling to a literalist interpretation in this case.
Well, I mean, how many courts now are taking a look at this issue? Because my question is, in these types of cases, can't a court, I mean, have the option to say, we're not even going to consider looking at that and throw it out as an option? Can they say that?
Not really. So there are some threshold questions kicking around the cases. Do these plaintiffs have standing? Are they the right plaintiffs to file suit? That kind of thing. Does a federal statute mean that you can't get to the substantive question here? By and large, the courts that have addressed this issue have said, look, the plaintiffs have a reasonable gripe, and it's our obligation to at least hear their concerns. To date, no court save the D.C. Circuit has ruled in favor of the plaintiffs. Two district courts have ruled in favor of the government, and the Fourth Circuit, on the same day that the D.C. Circuit decision came down, unanimously said that the government had this case right. So it's not altogether clear that the D.C. Circuit's decision is going to be the one that carries the day, but I do think that ultimately the plaintiffs will get their case heard on the merits.
What is this this drafting error? I'm hearing a lot of people in the media talk about that, and I should have told you at the beginning, Nick, you might be giving me credit because I have a show and I talk a lot of health policy, but just explain this to me like I'm a baby.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. Look, the question is what do you make of this text, which does say established by the state? Do you read that to, you know, literally to mean just the states and definitely not the federal government or not? And clearly it would have been better had Congress just said, yeah, if you go on an exchange, period, you get tax credits. And so to the extent that you see this established by the state language, you have to make some sense of it. You have to say, well, either it means really only state exchanges, or Congress didn't really mean that when it used those words. Just like, you know, if I called you Paul right now, you'd know that what I did was actually I meant to say Pete, but in context you understood that I got it wrong. By the same token, we can read congressional statutes and make sense of what their words mean from context. So, yeah, was this bad draftsmanship? Sure. Was it an error? Yeah, I can call it that. But the question is, how do we make sense of the words that actually made it into the statute? And here there are a lot of clues that Congress didn't mean to restrict tax credits to the federal exchanges, to the state exchanges, I'm sorry.
One simple solution, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, would be to say, for the government to admit that there was a mistake and that, well, sorry, clearly we meant that, but let's just fix it. You can't just fix it because that takes a vote, right? Like, they could just put a simple fix and change the language. I'm like, of course that's what we meant, but this is such a controversial law that, you know, House Republicans wouldn't even take this up for a vote. That's what would be required, right, to change the language?
That's exactly right. Now,
it
Congress
is.
could fix this tomorrow. But of course, like you said, they're not gonna.
But the issue that we argued with Dr. Carroll and my friend Eric Siegel, this constitutional scholar, the issue that they were arguing about was the problem here is that when you give someone something and then take it away, you've got a problem on your hands, and so that potentially could be the case here where people could lose their health insurance and premiums could skyrocket. Correct?
Absolutely. And you're entirely correct that scrambles the political calculus here quite a bit. So one thing that you have to keep in mind is assuming that the Supreme Court eventually upholds this ruling, which is possible, what would the political response be? Congress would certainly come under a lot of pressure to fix it. But, you know, the Republicans have proven intransigent to public pressure on lots of occasions, and we can expect them to remain intransigent on anything touching Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But what about at the state level? Right. So here in Michigan, we have a governor who supported the exchanges, and a Tea Party-dominated legislature said, no, we don't want anything to do with Obamacare. But we got the Medicaid program up and running. And the reason we got the Medicaid program up and running is, frankly, because there was money at stake. So now that money rides on the decision of whether to establish an exchange, after the Supreme Court upholds the D.C. Circuit's ruling, will the states reconsider? Will they go back to the drawing board and say, you know, I'd like my citizens to get tax credits, and I dislike Obamacare, but I don't dislike it that much. I don't want them to have their health insurance ripped away from them. So I'm going to do what I can to establish my own exchange.
Yes.
I think some states will.
Yeah, because, I mean, most Americans didn't follow this debate very closely, and those who did were confused by it, including myself. And we talked about it an hour a week for years, and we still talk about it all the time. People are still confused about the Affordable Care Act, and that's fair. Health policy and health insurance can be very confusing. So, but what people do know, almost everybody knows, I'm going to assume, whether or not they have health insurance, and if so, how much it costs if they're paying for it. And so the idea that people could lose that changes the calculus politically. So if you have a hardcore right-wing Tea Party guy who's now got lower health insurance or health insurance for the first time, as much as he might hate this, if he realizes it's being taken away from him, that changes the political calculus in let's say, Alabama, right?
I think that's absolutely right. You know, it's one thing when the states had a decision about whether to expand their Medicaid programs. And remember, Medicaid is the program for the very poorest of the poor, right? So when you had a choice about whether to expand Medicaid, the choice was whether to give insurance to these people for the first time. But here the choice is whether you persist in declining to establish your own state exchange when the cost is that hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, will have their insurance yanked away from them. That's a very different political question. It's very hard to run on a platform of, I'd like to raise your taxes and take your health insurance away from you.
What is your opinion, Nick, of what will happen legally here?
Yeah, so right now the D.C. Circuit panel has issued its decision, but the government can ask the D.C. Circuit to review the case as a whole, and it has said that it will do so.
And there's 10 judges in that case.
There are 11 judges who are active on the court, and if six of them vote to rehear the case will be reheard by a full panel of 13 judges. And if that happens, I expect the D.C. Circuit, the full court, to reverse the panel decision. So I think it's unlikely that this decision will stand for very long. The million-dollar question is whether the plaintiffs in the Fourth Circuit case, this is a case that arises out of Virginia presenting the same issue, a case where the government won. The question is whether the plaintiffs in that case will try to go straight to the Supreme Court and say, hey, help us out. We don't want to, you know, play around at the lower courts anymore. We want you to issue a final decision and resolve this case.
Well why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't the Supreme Court?
No, why wouldn't the plaintiffs? These guys are going pretty hard and have been for a long time. These you know, right-wing think tanks and lawyers and libertarian types.
Well, they will. There's no doubt they'll eventually go to the court. The question is just whether they go to the court now or whether they ask the Fourth Circuit to review the case. So they could ask the Fourth Circuit to take their case en banc. My hunch is they probably won't. My hunch is they will go straight to the Supreme Court for much the same reason that you said, that they've been going very hard at this case. They want it to get resolved quickly. So they'll ask the court to intervene. Now, it only takes four votes to grant a case at the Supreme Court. And there are four very unhappy Republican-appointed justices on the court who dissented the first time the Affordable Care Act was up at the Supreme Court. And so there's at least some possibility that they'd like to take another whack at the statute.
Well, so what would your prediction be on Roberts, right? Because he's the wild card, not Kennedy, even in this case?
It's hard to know. You know, the cases are different. One case is about the Constitution, and one case is about statutory construction. And so you could reasonably think that Obamacare is unconstitutional, but that the challenger's interpretation of the statute is wrong. And that could be Justice Kennedy. And it could be that the Chief Justice will also be inclined to rule in favor of the government. We don't know, and it's really hard to handicap. That's especially true when it comes to Justice Kennedy, who is, you know, a difficult man to read when it comes to outcomes and judicial decisions.
Right.
But it means that if you are the government, you would much prefer not to get to the Supreme Court, and you would much prefer not to roll the dice. So if you can tell the court, look, the lower courts have upheld the IRS rule uniformly because they got the D.C. Circuit en banc court to reverse the panel, and you don't need to intervene here. The government is hoping, and I think it's unlikely to work, but they're hoping that the Supreme Court just keeps its nose clean and doesn't get involved.
What about the reports of the imminent demise of Obamacare?
Yeah, those are all greatly exaggerated. You know, you were mentioning earlier that it's very different to debate whether to extend a benefit to somebody and then to debate whether to take that benefit away.
Once you've gotten it.
Once you've gotten it. And so, you know, right now, people in California and people in New York have all gotten tax credits. Lots and lots of people across many states have received Medicaid money, or Medicaid insurance. And so you've got a lot of people who've grown dependent on the statute already, now that it's been fully implemented. And it's really hard to see at the end of the day how the whole structure of the Affordable Care Act is done away with. From my perspective, I think we're much more likely to see what we've seen in the Medicaid side. Some states choose to sign up, other states don't. And if there's tax credits that ride on whether you establish your own exchange, I expect lots of states that haven't set up their own exchanges yet to do so. Some may not. Texas may still prove resistant.
Texas. But the highest percentage of uninsured Americans.
Absolutely, right? So Texas might say, no, we believe that Obamacare is the devil's work, and we're gonna continue resisting it at all costs. But a lot of other states don't have sort of that sort of entrenched antipathy toward Obamacare. And again, if you're talking about a choice between setting up an exchange, and you don't like that, like these are states that didn't want to set up exchanges in the first place. They don't want to, but gosh, they'll hold their nose and do it.
Right.
And so, at the end of the day, like, I just don't see this collapsing. I think it could prove embarrassing for the administration. I think it could be a headache for the administration. And I think it could have enormous costs for those families that are caught in the crossfire as states figure out whether or not they want to establish exchanges. I don't want to minimize those costs, but I do think the Affordable Care Act is here to stay.
Well, Nick, I read yesterday that reports that consumers saved $9 billion in premiums thanks to this giant monstrosity, this life-ending, world-ending Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. The idea is people, now that it's real, now that it's the law of the land, and now that we're not arguing about it on cable news and on the radio, they have it in their hands. They have it in their lives. They know what it is, and it's not, in many cases, what they were told it would be. So people are really liking this. In many cases, their insurance has gone down, and all those initial reports of people losing their insurance and their doctor, almost all of them had been debunked. We're not even hearing those claims anymore. And Republicans in Congress mostly have been pretty quiet about a lot of that. So, what if this case were to, be decided by the Supreme Court and not in favor of the government, what would that mean in terms of people losing insurance? Because it's my understanding, and I don't have a lot of understanding, Nick, as you know, but it's my understanding that you wouldn't actually lose your insurance, but you sure as hell wouldn't be able to afford it anymore.
That's exactly right. So there are sort of two questions. The first is at the more general level. What would happen in those states? Well, look, the tax credits would evaporate. So the tax credit to an individual family is worth, on average, $4,700. And that $4,700 is devoted toward the cost of health insurance, which is tremendously expensive. So yeah, health insurance will still be available in the states with federally established exchanges, but it'll just be way more expensive.
But I just
expensive for many families.
I just realized this, and I haven't heard this pointed out, so now I do feel smart. I mean, John Stewart did kind of point it out there, but let me just be really clear. This court case brought by conservative legal types and think tanks, which could strike down this statute here, would mean that the people, the Americans who are getting insurance through these exchanges in these 36 states would be the ones that would have to pay much higher premiums that would be unaffordable. So so let me just make it more concise. Conservative lawyers are making an argument that could potentially – make people living in predominantly red states, all of these states are red states, conservative states, lose their insurance or not be able to afford it. The people that live in the blue states that have the state-run exchanges would not be hurt.
That's right.
Holy
and
shit.
That's pretty much the size of it. Yeah, and it's funny, that we also saw the same thing with the Medicaid expansion. It was, the states then had a choice about whether to expand their Medicaid program after the Supreme Court decision. And the states that chose not to were, by and large, the red states. So essentially what you see is a bunch of conservative lawyers making arguments about why all the money that was supposed to be distributed predominantly to red states, because they have poorer citizens on average, why all that money shouldn't go out to those citizens, and why instead it should remain in federal coffers. One of the great ironies is that, you know, the Affordable Care Act, when it was enacted, ends up kind of shifting a bunch of money around. It shifts money from the better off to the worse off. Because, again, more people who are worse off are in the red states. In practice, it worked as a big money transfer from the blue states to the red states. Nonetheless, the red states resisted it tooth and nail. And they've resisted it so forcefully in the courts that they may actually reverse the Affordable Care Act. Before, it was a transfer of money from the blue states to the red states. Now, it may become a transfer of money from the red states, which can least afford it, to the blue states. It's a crazy world.
That is unreal. The way that we just figured it out here at the end is, I think that's what's got to be explained, the way you just did over and over, so that these folks can all understand it. We are out of time. You're awesome. Really helped me understand this.
I really appreciate it.
To reward our guest, please follow him on Twitter, Nicholas_Bagley. And the question that all guests are getting and have to answer today, and this will be cathartic, Nick. You'll feel better. You're going
to
feel better. It's going to be embarrassing, but when you get off the phone, you're going to be like, you know what? I'm glad. And I hope you don't get in trouble with your wife if you're married or whatever. What is your sinful snack? You don't want anybody to know that you eat this, but you eat it, and you eat it somewhat often.
My sinful snack? Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Oh, man. You know, I'll be honest, and now I feel like I'm just an industry. I don't snack very often.
Okay.
Oh, man, I'm terrible, Pete. You're never going to have me on the show again.
Well, I feel you being dishonest. Let me give a little more specific. No ice cream? No potato chips? No candy?
No, I mean, I don't like the candy. Makes my tongue get, like, bumpy with, you know, inflamed taste buds. And, you know, like, we just don't have potato chips now.
I'm so disappointed.
I know.
You never have an ice cream?
Oh, I have ice cream, sure, but, you know, like with dessert, you know, after dinner.
Pie?
I like pie.
Cake?
Of course.
But only if it's there. You're not allowed to have it in the house.
No, you know, no. I mean, we have it in the house, but again, for dessert, I don't.
All right. I need a picture of your full body, and I need your diet, and you can send that over. Thank you, Nick. We really appreciate it, buddy.